Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to our session at Microsoft ALM Days on Design Thinking and Business Model Innovation and Product Development. My name is Sumit Shetty. I'm a development manager within the Development Tools Organization at SAP. This is my colleague, Dr. Tobias Hildenbrand.
Morning.
You want to introduce yourself, Tobias?
Well, so I'm a good friend of Sumit, actually. Glad that we made it here finally after we fell both sick last year. So Sumit will start and then we'll take over in the middle of a talk and shed some more light on what is business model innovation at SAP.
Mm-hmm. And before I start, I want to say that the last time I was in Cologne, I came here for a Coldplay concert, so I was in a very good mood. So I just want to say that I'm equally excited to be here at ALM Days. Yeah? Thank you. So we want to take you today, before we start talking about design thinking and business model innovation, a little through the innovation journey of SAP. And as most of you already know, SAP was started by a bunch of people who were working for a large enterprise software company. And it's the classic story of entrepreneurship. They quit their interesting day jobs and decide to set up their own company. And that was way back in 1972, and it was a good decision for them because it changed their lives, and it changed the lives of a lot of other people and businesses around the world. We just wanted to take you through a brief timeline of how SAP has evolved and how our product development model has evolved during this time. So we started off in 1972, like any entrepreneurial organization. I'm sure it was flat hierarchies. You sit around at a table, you debate product ideas. A couple of hours later, maybe you have the first prototype. You call in a customer representative or you go and meet your customer because they're located close to you. And that works very well in the initial phases of a startup of any kind. You small number of employees, creative people, they have the drive, they have the enthusiasm, they have the determination to do many different things. Just a moment. And then as the organization grows, then you have to deal with having a repeatable, reliable model for your product development. So somewhere in the 80s, we had this model of project-based development where we were working together with customers and so-called developer consultants. So today you might have a fancy term for it and describe it as co-innovation, but we were already doing that way back in the 80s. As the company grew, we also had to adapt our processes. And in the 90s then, we had the first version of what was called the SAP software development lifecycle, based on the classic waterfall. Over the years, we iterated that. And in the 2000s, you had the second version of the SAP software development lifecycle. Then somewhere in the mid-2000s, you had what was called the product innovation lifecycle. We called it internally within SAP PIL. Maybe some of you know about that. There was an attempt at simplification a little later in the 2000s, where we came together with three paradigms. We called it the white, yellow, and blue model of development. And it was one of them was meant for research. One of them was the old way of doing things. And one of these three models also was setting the foundation for the first foray by SAP into agile development. But towards the end of the 2000s, we had a problem which many successful companies have, which is that you have the founders of a company have a great idea. You quickly attract customers. You grow in revenues. You grow in size. Our average revenue per employee towards the end of the 2000s was going down as the company was increasing in size. And that was something that we wanted to address. So there was a thought to go towards a leaner way of software development. So we made our foray into lean and agile software development then, somewhere in the late 2000s. To be specific, around 2009 is when we started our journey. And as you can imagine, for a large software development organization like SAP, it was not an easy transition. Today, we are over 70,000 employees all over the world. Our stated mission is to become the preeminent cloud company powered by SAP HANA. We focused on applications, on analytics, on mobile, on cloud. And we'd like to go back a little bit to our roots. Yeah, with these 70,000 employees, we'd like to have a little bit of the entrepreneurial culture that we had when we started the organization. We'd like to be leaner, we'd like to be meaner. We'd like to get things done quicker and without having all of the problems that you have when you have software behemoths or large organizations.
So, Sumit, I actually have to save the joke from the German version. Our Mitarbeiterstamm is about 70,000 people, so as you see in the picture here.
Thanks to Tobias. So the challenge that we face today is we'd like to do customer-centered innovation on an enterprise scale. And for us, the goal is innovation. And we see that as the intersection of three things: feasibility, desirability, and viability. And here, feasibility is about being able to build a product with existing technologies to deliver it on time. Desirability is about making your product attractive, making customers want to use your product or to buy your product. And viability is the whole big question of, is there even a market that justifies the corporate investment in your product? And the way we try to do it at the moment is customer-centered. So we work together very closely with customers. We first diverge, and we create a lot of choices in terms of opportunities, in terms of options. And then we come back again and brainstorm and converge and choose one or more of these multiple options which we think will help us hit that sweet spot of desirability, feasibility, and viability, which is the essence of any good innovation. It brings together these three different elements which are so difficult to achieve at one shot. So changing a large organization is like trying to boil an ocean. You cannot do it overnight. You have to go in steps. So what we decided to do is the first step was to build a more lean and agile organization. And this was, like I said earlier, the late 2000s. I was one of the first lean coaches in the team in India. We really had to train our workforce to look at a new way of working, a new model of working. And the fundamental problem that you have in such a transition is people ask you, why should we change when we've done something so successfully and we've been successful for over 40 years? We had to make a case that the whole idea of becoming agile and lean is you want to deliver more reliably, you want to be more predictable. And the biggest thing is when you have large software organizations or where you have even large organizations in general, and you have large projects, the risk is huge, and you don't even know if you're managing that risk well. So we made the case that instead of having huge risks in software projects that run for years, with a lean and agile approach, we could break that risk down into manageable units, which could even be managed at the level of the individual teams. So more power to, let's say, the employee, rather than decisions being taken top-down. How did we go about doing this transition? We split our huge organization into small teams. So for instance, the smallest unit at the end of the day would be a Scrum team with about 10 people. We had this concept of teams of 10. We split the large amounts of work that we had into smaller units. We went into this mode of backlog, being a backlog-driven company. So we invested in a backlog management solution, and everybody within the organization could see what another team was doing. What were their priorities? And you could comment on it if you thought that a particular team, a particular organization was not doing the things that you wanted them to do or what customers wanted them to do. It was visible, it was transparent throughout the length and breadth of the company, which meant that, for instance, I as a developer could look at any of the products that SAP was developing and see what was actually on their backlog. What we also did is we split our time. Instead of delivering in cycles which were as huge as a year, we started looking at faster deliveries. We internally tuned our processes to ensure that our sprint cycles were short. So I think there were teams which initially started with sprint cycles of 6 weeks, brought that down to 4 weeks. In the end, there were even teams which had short sprints of 1 week, where they would have a review at the end of the week and then do a quick retrospective. Now, this worked well. It worked really well. It allowed us to become more productive. It allowed us to become more efficient. It solved some of the problems of a large software development organization, that it really made transparent what people are doing within the company. And that was already a big win for us, because with transparency also comes more information about the problems and the problems that need management attention and attention from everybody in the workforce.
Maybe just to put it in perspective, before Lean and Agile, the average or the good case of a project was running 18 months. So, and you know what 18 months mean in software and in requirements engineering and so on. Mm-hmm.
So when we went into this model, it also meant that for a couple of topics, you decided after a few sprints that it was not worth investing in. In the beginning, there were teams which said, oh, I invested this time and now we're not going ahead with it. But in the end, we all realized that it's much better to fail early, fail often, make those decisions early than do it after 2 years of software development. But there was still a fundamental issue that this did not solve. Agile development starts with a product vision. And Agile can only make you leaner, meaner, faster, more productive, more efficient. But where is this product vision coming from? Is it two people sitting over a coffee table having a conversation and saying, I have a great idea, let's make a product out of it? That part was not yet addressed. Were we having the right vision? Were we doing the right thing? And another thing is we as an organization are developing standard software for enterprise users. So it was very important for us to be in the shoes of our end users, see how they were using our products, our solutions. There's a quote that I want to share from Hasso Plattner, the chairman of SAP, and he says a developer needs to be curious and develop empathy for end users. And during the time that we were doing this transition, this was a quote that was printed on a lot of posters, and we looked at sending this message out to developers that it's not about cool technologies. It's not about coming to office and learning a new technology. It's about what you do with existing and with emerging technologies, which makes a difference to your customer. So step two for us was about putting agile development, which brought efficiency, productivity, which made us lean, together with design thinking. So what we started doing is, I talked about these teams of 10, we started making these teams cross-functional. So every team of 10 would have developers, it would have a scrum master, it would have somebody who could take care of architecture. We added a designer into the mix. So each of these teams were self-sufficient to do all the things that you need to create a product. And in addition to creating or setting up cross-functional teams, we said, sometimes what boxes us in is also the physical box that we are placed in. For instance, we work in office spaces and in cubicles, which are more or less standardized, and they are not always the most collaborative workspaces. They're not inspiring you to do things. So we created special design thinking spaces where we tried to bring people together. These spaces were tuned to allow collaboration, to be places where you're inspired. You had all the necessary equipment, all the things that you needed to collaborate and do design thinking together. We took an iterative approach to design thinking, where we said we first understand our customer, we observe, we take down and define points of view, then we ideate, we create some quick prototypes. In some cases, the first prototype could also be a paper prototype, where you show somebody a sketch on a piece of paper and saying, do you think this kind of a product would work? And would a customer be willing to pay for it? So it was a quick, effective way of getting feedback. Some of the prototypes never went past the prototype stage, because when we tested them with our customers, we didn't get the feedback that they would pay for a product or a solution which did whatever it was meant to do. But the most promising prototypes, those were the ones which went on, let's say, to become product ideas. Now, we talked about Agile, we talked about Lean, which solves the problem of productivity and efficiency. Then we talked about bringing this together with design thinking. And we'd covered desirability and we'd covered feasibility, but there was still one very big question. It was about how to convert our product ideas into money. I had a boss some years ago who defined research and innovation in a very interesting way, and I want to share that with you. And he said, research is converting money into ideas, and innovation is converting ideas into money. So in this case here, we wanted to look at the viability of what we were doing. Is there a market? Are we going to make enough revenue? Does the investment justify the expected revenue, the addressable market? And that's where we came into this whole idea of business model development. And when we started talking about this, the first question we would get from developers was, I'm a developer. Why should I worry about business models? Isn't that something that the go-to-market team needs to think about? Yeah, or the sales team needs to think about? People in the field need to think about. My role is to develop great software. And then we started talking about how often it's not about the product, but it's about the business model. For instance, when Xerox came up with the photocopier, one of the things that made them eminently successful was not just the fact that they had a patent on the photocopier itself, but they were very revolutionary in their thinking. Photocopiers were expensive, so they provided an option where they said, you know, you don't need to buy the photocopier. For a certain base fee, we could come and install the photocopier at your business. And then for paying that fee, let's for the sake of argument say 1,000 euros for a year, you get a certain number of free copies already. And then you are enabled to quickly set up your business. And then you pay on top of that for whatever additional copies you take. So maybe one of the early examples of a subscription model in this industry. We also had to engage with our workforce by giving them contemporary examples. Now, Xerox and the photocopier is a long time back. The world has changed quite a bit since then. So we talked to them about Google. We talked to them about Amazon. We talked to them about Uber. And I want to take the example of Uber. I come from Bangalore in India, where until 2 years ago, if you had to get a taxi, you had to call for a taxi 1 hour in advance. And even then, you were not sure if the taxi would land up at your doorstep on time. So this meant if I had to go out, I had to call up a call center 2 hours earlier, or even maybe at 9 o'clock in the morning if I want a taxi at five, and say, could you please send a taxi when I need it? When Uber came to India, their promise was, we get you a taxi anytime, anywhere, within 10 minutes. And the first ride was free. So I remember the first time I installed Uber and tried to book a taxi, it said, a taxi will be at your place in 3 minutes. And the place where I live in Bangalore, it takes 3 minutes for you to negotiate the price once you find the taxi. where you're discussing how much you're willing to pay versus how much is expected. It disrupted the taxi industry in India completely. You had established players which were in the taxi industry for 20 years, making a lot of money. Overnight, people started switching to Uber. And the most interesting thing was, I tried to find out how many people work for Uber in Bangalore, because at one point they were managing 15,000 cars. And can you guess how many people would have been managing 15,000 cars in the Uber office in Bangalore? Take a wild guess. 15? Any other guesses? Anybody? One? Okay, extreme. Anybody wants to go to the other end and say 500? I thought Uber would have had 50 people in Bangalore managing these 15,000 cars, because you need to have people to sign up drivers, you need to manage the relationship, you need to manage the sales and marketing, you need to manage logistics, payments. Uber in Bangalore has 3 people. And one of those 3 people is the general manager of Uber. And he does everything. And these 3 people with Uber's app have disrupted the market completely and taken a significant market share. Yeah? And as you can imagine, I know that in different countries there has been also there have also been protests against Uber, because the established taxi industry doesn't want this disruption. But these disruptions are here to stay, and this business model where you revolutionize the taxi industry by being a software company. For me, Uber at the end of the day is a software company which manages an app, and you have 3 guys doing some things which need to manage relationships with drivers. The work of ferrying people around is being done by the drivers. Uber is not investing in the cars, at least the model that they follow in India. So new business models are going to come in and disrupt big companies, and that includes the likes of software companies like us. That was the case that we made. And then people said, okay, that's great. We understand the Uber example, but why should SAP worry about business models? We are going into a whole new set of areas, industry clouds, business networks, Internet of Things, platform as a service. How we create value in these cases and how we monetize it, how we make money out of this, is something that we're figuring out at the moment. And it is very important for not only people in the field and in go-to-market and sales to understand how business models work. We want to embed that into the whole product development process right from the beginning. So we made the case that while you're doing product design, parallelly you're also thinking about business model design. You don't build your product and then say, okay, now let's look at creative ways on how we can sell this and make money out of it. It reminds me of a little story that I read in a book on software pricing. So software pricing is a very interesting area where you can have different arguments on how you need to charge customers, right? So one of the books that I read on software pricing said there was a company which came up with a product, a software product, and then they had to decide how to price it. And they decided to price a subscription at $19.54. And their scientific method of doing this was that the founder of the company's mother was born in 1954. So he said, I priced it at 19.54. Right? Now that's very creative, and I'm sure his mother was touched, but that's probably not how you want to do it if you want to build a sustainable and a serious business. So our case is, we say, start your product design and at the same time think about, is it a perpetual license with maintenance fees? Is it a cloud subscription model? There are, I think, in different industries, over 100 different business models, and you can combine them and play around and maybe create a new market like Uber did a little earlier in my example. So then this begs the question, what do we mean when we talk about a business model? Do you need to have gone to a business school to understand it? Do you need to be a freshly minted MBA? And for us, a business model is a description which is well illustrated by this canvas. It's about what's your value proposition, what are your key activities that you engage in as a company, what are your resources, what are your relationships with customers, how do you deal with your customers in these channels, what are your costs, what are your revenues, and also the network view where you look at where do you stand as a company, who are your partners, your customers, and your competition. One example of a standard SAP business model is the classic one of our on-premise business suite. So we build the software, then we have partners who are build and develop partners. They give us trainings and we give them trainings and certifications and they give us fees. Then you have sales partners. We give them leads and commissions. They bring us customers who pay. You have service and implementation partners where we give them certifications and they bring in fees. You also have your customer network. You have your large enterprises and you have your small and mid-sized enterprises. And then, of course, there's the competition. Tobias and I talked this morning and we said SAP traditionally does not name its competition. So we left the slide blank and Tobias made a little joke that that's because after over 40 years, we are still figuring out who our competition is.
Who that actually is, yeah.
Just joking. So there's a very interesting video that gives a brief summary of what a business model is all about, and maybe we should play that.
It's just 3 minutes for you to relax.
An organization's business model can be described with 9 basic building blocks: your customer segments, your value proposition for each segment, the channels to reach customers, customer relationships you establish, the revenue streams you generate, the key resources and key activities you require to create value, the key partners, and the cost structure of the business model. But it's not sufficient to just enumerate the 9 building blocks. What you really want to do is to map them out on a pre-structured canvas. This is what we call the Business Model Canvas, a tool that helps you map, discuss, design, and invent new business models. Let's briefly go through the 9 building blocks, starting with the customer segments. These are all the people or organizations for which you're creating value. This includes simple users and paying customers. For each segment, you have a specific value proposition. These are the bundles of products and services that create value for your customers. The channels describe through which touch points you're interacting with customers and delivering value. The customer relationships outline the type of relationship you're establishing with your customers. Revenue streams make clear how and through which pricing mechanisms your business model is capturing value. Then you need to describe the infrastructure to create, deliver, and capture value. The key resources show which assets are indispensable in your business model. The key activities show which things you really need to be able to perform well. The key partners show who can help you leverage your business model, since you won't own all key resources yourself, nor you perform all key activities. Then once you understand your business model's infrastructure, you'll also have an idea of its cost structure. So with the Business Model Canvas, you can map out your entire business model in one image. This works for startup entrepreneurs just as well as for the most senior executives.
Okay. So to take you through business models in detail and how we do that at SAP, I will hand over to Dr. Hildenbrand here. Over to you, Tobias.
Okay, getting back here. Good. Did anyone know that video on YouTube? It's quite famous. Or has anyone worked with the Business Model Canvas as a template? It's Creative Commons, so you can download a version also and use it. For us, it's very handy because it contains, if you take a software project or an investment decision for us, it contains all the elements Sumita has already described. On the right hand, you have the market view, yeah, the desirability, the end users, customer view. On the left hand side, you have, so to say, what do we need, which people, which resources, patterns, technology, which are the key activities, what do we do ourselves, what do we do, or what do we get from partners, so how to build it, and derive from that logic the costs and revenues, which are then the basis for the actual business case. To continue the example, this is still our classical business suite model, where we have two big customer segments, the large enterprises, the BASFs, Roche, and so on of this world, and small, medium enterprises. And the first thing, which sometimes surprises our product owners, is that, well, you have to find a particular value proposition for each segment. Yeah? So for the large enterprises, it's rather the security that they have, you know, the CIO invests in something in a company that might not be broke the other day. Whereas for the small, medium enterprises, they rather look for the packaged content, the best practices, and so on that come along with SAP. The same also, as you heard in the video, for the channels, for the customer relations, and so on. Now, if anyone read the abstract, we also put in the keyword innovator's dilemma. This is a phenomenon that hits most big companies that are famous or successful with one particular product, as in our case, the Business Suite. The whole company, even if it's 70,000 people and 25,000 developers, it kind of optimizes itself toward that key or a set of key products, making it extremely hard for innovative or disruptive innovation, like in the Uber example, to come through. This is exactly what we are trying to fix, what we are fighting. This is what you saw our team is doing, using design thinking, what Sumit already described, and using business model innovation approaches from the outside world. We learn from smaller companies. We learn from what we did in the past. We learn from startups, what we are trying to reestablish, so to say. So how does business model innovation work at SAP? Does it work at all? Yes. There are some recent cases. Is it easy? No, it isn't. Just to give you an idea, we said it earlier, we came up with some new, for instance, partner and reselling models. We also went into the business of information as a service, selling or including consumers directly. We invested heavily in business networks. You might have heard about this pilot project in the city of Hanover. It was used to be called Connected Vehicles, Connected Cars. Now I think it's called SAP Vehicles Network. It's a cooperation with Volkswagen and some other big companies. We went into the in our cloud transition as an intermediate step. We went into the managed cloud business, and as I already said, into the consumer business. Now, do you know what the difference is, SAP in terms of SAP's company structure compared, I think, to most other DAX 30 companies? So we are not organized into separate business units. There was a move towards that recently. That means if we establish a new product with a new business model, we literally have to go from, in German you would say, Pontius to Pilatus. Yeah, we have to go through different teams, get approvals through all board areas. So to give you a perspective, about 30 different things. So at the moment it's not really easy, and this is why we came up with the approach we called Business Model Innovation Service Center, which is kind of a virtual team across all these board areas. So myself, I'm responsible for business model innovation, for the business model innovation team in development, in our development organizations. Then you have people in finance, you have people in the marketing organization, and so on. So what we do, and as Sumit already outlined, we drive the business model design from within development, because we say we can no longer just, you know, build some product based on an idea that someone had and then throw it over the fence for the go-to-market people and for them to make up the pricing. Actually, another story, because you mentioned it. Has anyone of you heard about SAP Hybris as a service? YaaS platform? It's a new platform approach for e-commerce applications. And actually, the idea came when the management team was sitting with a couple of beers in Central Park, New York. So, talking about product vision. So sometimes it doesn't take design thinking to start with. But what we did, we worked with the team for almost 2 years now to iterate, to elaborate the idea, to get them into the process. We developed a couple of MVPs, not in the sense of Microsoft here, what is means most valuable partner.
Professional.
Professional, yeah. It means most valuable product. I'm not sure if you heard about the term of the lean startup world. What we try to do, starting with these easy and cheap paper prototypes, Sumit mentioned in design thinking, we work that towards the, in small steps, or we try to work it toward the final product. Take the connected car example, yeah? We had prototypes, we had paper mock-ups in the very beginning, but then we set up this little, let's say, test scenario in Hanover where people could actually sit in the car and try out, okay, how is it to get information about parking, about getting gas, about getting to where I am. And with the difference, and we are talking about viability here, that the partners we intend to be in on our networks, they were also actually investing time, and also they paid a little fee, so to say. Because we realized, you know, has any one of you been to some SAP conferences, TechEd, Sapphire, stuff like that? It's always easy to show mock-ups and the UI, and people say, customers say, okay, this is nice, and okay. But this has literally no meaning or relation to their buying behavior at the end. So we say, okay, we need to test the desirability on the one hand, and feasibility for sure, but we also need new ways to test the viability, because before we do the full investment into development, which means sometimes 30, 50 teams building a product for a couple of years. And then we don't only have the perpetual license and maintenance model yet. We have also other business models that are well established for public cloud, for managed cloud. So once we, out of development, have found this, what we call 80-20, yeah, an appropriate business model for us, using this business model canvas template, we make a decision whether we can use the standard blueprint out of our so-called business model library, or if we have to go this full way, as I called it, from Pontius to Pilatus, creating really a new business model which then adds plus one to the database. And the final goal is to make it to the price list, meaning that we're able to sell the product to customers and partners. But the idea is here to to learn. You can call it inspect and adapt. You can call it build, measure, learn. Very early, fail early if necessary, before making this full investment into go-to-market and into development.
Just one sentence that I want to add here, that it makes it easy for you to have an established business model library. You don't need to start off from scratch. So if there is already an established business model and there is a reference list, you can look at that and see if that fits to the new product idea that you have. But if you want to be disruptive and invent something new, then we, if that business model goes through all the phases and is approved, then we come and add it back to the library for somebody else to look at it.
How do we do that? We start with a baseline. So we just, what does that mean? We just meet the relevant people from the product team, architects, solution management, and literally we stand in front of a wall. We do live workshops. Yeah. So we have these business model canvases printed on an A0 size poster, and we fill it up with what people in the room know. This might sound trivial, but sometimes this is the first time these people actually meet, because we have all these locations on a global scale. So it has a value in its own right. And then we developed a set of method to iterate this business model until we come to a point where we call, okay, this is the way to go. The N here varies from 3 to 30, you know. It depends really on the project, on the project size, and I will come up with an example in a couple of minutes. We call that approach Business Model Development Innovation, BMDI. By the way, something also which customers can get consulted on from our organization. We started this as a little service innovation topic, but it got, besides that we use it ourselves inside, it got pretty big in the last couple of years. You know, other topics, digital transformation, businesses are disrupted, not only taxi industry by Uber, there's, you know, the power industry with the changes in the regulations and so on. This is why we are not only using this approach inside SAP on a big scale, but we also provide it to our customers. We are also engaged in universities. We also obviously support startups, because these are our future partners, so to say, customers. Do this on a pretty big scale. What does the approach look like? I've mentioned some of the terms. It all starts with that business model description, business model canvas, network view, which we talked about earlier. Then we have a set of methods to analyze and improve certain aspects of the business model, because obviously just standing in front of a wall for an hour and putting post-it on it is not enough. You talk about competition, you might have to do some research, or what is our competition actually. You make assumptions on, okay, what is my customer segment, what is the value proposition. You have to verify that with customers, yeah. You have to talk to them. You might then also use the classical design thinking approaches, like user research, coming up with a persona, which is a stereotypical description of end users and customers, in order to improve that. You might want to also check, okay, is the assumptions, the so-called make or buy decision, yeah, what I want to make myself, what I want to get from partners, is that right? Can I improve something here? Are the costs killing me? Yeah, checking that back with either external partners or internal cloud provisioning costs, for instance. So you need to do a lot of iterations here to remove the literal question marks from these boxes. So the template is easy, and I know a lot of approaches, and does someone of you know the book by Alexander Osterwalder, Business Model Generation? Filling the boxes is easy, but then the question is, okay, how do I work with that? What we also do, in the second type of iteration, we try to look at the business model as a whole and really challenge it, questioning, okay, can we really, are we ready to have a platform as a, or is the market ready, for instance, to have a platform as a service business in the e-commerce field and so on, and then come up with innovation techniques in order to develop different version of a business model we then validate on the market. How do we do that? We leverage the concept of MVPs. As I said, an MVP can be a storyboard on the wall, and ABB can, some of you might know the Dropbox example, before the guys really built all the clients for iOS and for Android and for Windows and what have you, they came up with a little landing page which contained a video showing the Dropbox idea. Does anyone know that? It's that story of that guy that travels Africa and he was afraid to lose all his papers, so he puts all his files on the Dropbox store. He shares it with his mother. The mother takes the pictures and has it printed in the print shop and so on. So they created this idea of the value proposition in people's head, and then they measured, you see here, build, measure, learn. Then they measured how people react. So how many people are watching the video, how many people are signing up as beta testers or even signing up as future customers. And then they said, okay, if also for the sake of an example, 200 people sign up in the first week, then the idea is not so bad and we continue. Otherwise, we have to seriously rethink it.
I think that's how Kickstarter works with all of these ideas, getting them validation and funding.
You set a threshold and see if you hit the bar. Again, SAP is a big company. We have a portfolio process. We have investment decisions. So at the end of the day, you need a business case. So this is why we connect this also to actually creating the facts and figures. So we help the teams out of this logic. Okay, I have these and that market segments. This is my pricing proposal. To make a plan in cloud world, it's most of the times for 5 years. Yeah, how many customers do I expect in year 1, 2, 3? And help them calculate the actual business case. Because at the end of the day, either someone on the L1, L2 management level has to decide, or they need to get some extra budget out of our portfolio. So, and for that, you need a business case. I sometimes say this is kind of the connection from that design thinking, business model innovation world to the real corporate world again. But it helps the team to justify their investment, basically. When we do such projects, we see two patterns. A lot of times there is some top-down investment. So for instance, we say, okay, we need to invest in a business network for, I don't know, random example, for transportation, something like that. And then we start thinking from broad to narrow. Yeah. So we think about the enterprise, the network view first. So what on a high level could be the market segments? What could be the competition? What could be the partners? Then we go one level deeper. We look into the business model canvas, breaking up the details. Then we look deeper into the value proposition topic. And then we might apply design thinking to really validate the value proposition, get more empathy also for certain end user profiles. But there's another pattern that comes up. If you have, you might call it research projects or innovation projects, they often start with a very, very particular problem of one certain end user. And it's also fair, and the approach also works that way, the other way around, to start with a design thinking, with exploring the problem, understanding it, doing research, personas, idea, prototype test, all that Sumit described. And then work it from the, let's say, end user product design level up to the business model level. Yeah, think about, okay, now I have now some compelling prototype for the end user, but who is making the buying decision? It's the guys in marketing. What is the job to be done of a marketing manager? Okay, what does the overall business model look like, and what could be the network view look like? So it works in both ways. So we have very good, let's say, very good experience with that. Set of methods. Any questions so far? Because I brought a little example also, an example project, where design thinking and business model innovation practices are combined. Maybe not the most typical project for SAP. Has anyone of you heard about SAP Sports One? Some of you might have one of the pre, or it contains a product that was called Match Insights. It was actually prototyped in 2014 in Brazil with the German national team. The MVP was pretty successful, as some of you heard. This is not just a fun project. So you might have seen when you're into sailing or tennis that SAP has a marketing department where we, you know, build little apps for sports. But we also, I think, when was it? A year ago, about? We launched our 26th industry, which is called sports, media, and entertainment. The other industries being automotive, pharmaceutical, and so on and so forth. So we are really investing now also in the field of sports. Maybe a little. Do you see someone familiar here on that team picture? Exactly. This is here Oliver Bierhoff. So as I said, together with the DFB, with Hoffenheim, for obvious reasons, and some other big sports clubs, we went on that journey to develop a... at the beginning, it was the idea was called Sports Suite. So not in order for big clubs like, you know, Bayern Munich and Barcelona to manage their finance, the classical SAP business, but rather managing their most valuable resources, which is the players. So the idea, and this was the second name the thing had, SAP Pro Sports, but now it's called Sports One, was to really, this is the product vision, to support them regarding their core business, which is then the actual sport, yeah, winning trophies, winning championships. We started with soccer, but let's say the runway contains ice hockey, hockey, basketball, American football, baseball, all kind of team sports, basically. And as I said, the central business business element is the player, is the team. On top of the team management, you have tools like the Match Insights, which is a video analysis tool. So to give you an idea, certain video footage is kind of index, and you can, for example, put a request, okay, show me all scenes where Lionel Messi is hitting a pass that is longer than 20 meters, yeah? And then you can put this together and put it onto Jerome Boateng's iPhone, and he can check it the day before the game, yeah? And we will do something similar also this year at the Euro Cup, and hopefully it is as successful as back then. It's a really interesting project for applying all these methods because it's a new industry. It contains a lot of roles. I mean, you have the players. The players are very young, so, and they are used to Facebook and Apple on all kind of UI. So anything which looks like R3 is unacceptable. So we had to really improve on that side. Sports is a lot of big data. Yeah, I mean, you have video, you have health data. The solution also contains management of medical data, up to business critical, mission critical things like drug tests. Yeah, so you have a lot of different roles. And as you know, also soccer is a very, can you say, particular community. Yeah, you have these the chief coaches, which are very which are characters, yeah. You have the video analysts, the scouts, you have the bus driver, which is only a joke here. But we really had to take care of all these different roles, understand them, show them to understand. And what we did, we started with design thinking, yeah. We really went to Munich, Hoffenheim, walking with the physiotherapist for a day, looking over their shoulders, somewhat like Hasso and the other founders at the very beginning, yeah. We talk about back to the roots. They were really literally sitting on the laps of or in the laps of a of their first customer, which was ICI in pharmaceuticals, looking what they are doing in accounting. I mean, they didn't think design thinking back then. It was more of a practical reason because they didn't have their own mainframe computers, so they needed to really program at the customer side. But with these kind of projects, we are trying to get back to the roots. And also, in the other sense, as we said, we are driving this on a global scale all over development. So we need these kind of examples for our own people to realize, you know, yes, this is sports, but you can also do it for logistics, for healthcare, and whatever projects. Yeah, this is nice to try out stuff, but we also want to learn how these methods work. And as some of you might know, Scrum is easy if you have one team or three, yeah, and design thinking, all that stuff. I'm also teaching at Mannheim University. if you run a workshop with students, you don't have to talk about design thing. They just do this. Yeah, they grab the post-its, they write stuff. You don't have to name the game there. But for us, we have also, when we talked about an innovation journey, we have a big journey, and this is a big change project. And if any one of you was involved in a change project, it's a lot about also communication, inspiring people, motivating people. And this is what we are trying to do, besides that little fact of overcoming the innovator's dilemma and creating innovative products in a continuous manner. So to give you some more insights, how it looks like, so this is a typical room we use for these kind of workshops. You see at the beginning, the team was quite baffled, yeah, with that big challenge. Oh God, we have to create this new solution for all kinds of team sports and with really, really big expectations from the board, from the outside world. But we said, okay, we'll take you through that. So myself and another colleague were really the coaches of their team, working with them for a year or so. This is just to give you an impression what such a workshop looks like. Yeah, we created, as I said earlier, we spent some time to create the baseline, have the team come together, okay. What is your customer segment? What is it? And so on. Yes, and we also eat, even for an hour, so we do breaks. Then we take another iteration to analyze and improve. In that case, we also did the typical value proposition, customer segment matching. And we used this first day, so to say, to come up with our biggest challenges. And one of these was, and I mentioned it, look, we have this highly motivated team, so almost everybody from inside development was applying for the sports team at that point in time. And the big expectations, and we had this, you know, World Cup 2014, which was which gave us a great entry point into the market. But it was also seen as a challenge, you know, because these big expectations to be met and the timelines, because we needed to have something running, something that is meaningful for the larger market in a very short time. We normally do this in a two-day manner. So on day two, we would then continue to work on ideas, to think about MVPs and so on. Just to give you an idea, or another example of a network view, we consolidated all these different roles, coaches, medical and so on, into the customer segment clubs, and the other one is associations. So we have on the one hand concrete clubs like Hoffenheim, and we have associations like the DFB, and we do have, you might wonder, well, why is SAP its own customer? Yeah, but we are a big company, so the case also serves as a, let's say, as a showcase for SAP, you know, to show, okay, we use our latest technology, we use our latest methods, we get into the talk with the guys in the clubs, and they have their sponsors and so on. And you see the plethora of different partners, so content partners, technology partners, even you see Panasonic here, yeah, and these kind of vendors, because for this video analysis tool I mentioned, you need a certain, the guys in the back probably know, a certain format of video to make it indexable and so on. And also, we looked at the competition here. Also very important, the team is 30 plus people, yeah. So, and you cannot work with all of them. But what we did regular sessions where we informed some of the managers or the leading people in this project, informed the entire team, okay, what is going on, so that every developer who might develop a certain algorithm in the video analysis tool, but gets kind of the big picture in the latest version of the big pictures. Obviously, we're not doing this every week, but maybe yeah, once a quarter or every other month. So this was very well perceived. So people that, you know, really know, okay, where's my stuff I'm coding ending up? Conclusion, to give you the chance to have some coffee this time after Sam robbed you of the other chance, and maybe also some questions. So we are here, we have our drinks, so if you're up for some questions, we are more than happy to answer them. Conclusion for us after, what is it, 6-7 years innovation journey?
7 years.
7 years. There are some common values, yeah? Focus on customer value. For instance, that Agile, DT, and BMI share, yeah? You always want to you know, in Agile, you want to sort the backlog according to customer value. In design thinking, you want to get behind, okay, what is it actually that they fancy, that they like? And in BMI, you want to say, okay, how can I monetize this? You work in iterations. You deliver incrementally, be it plain prototypes at the very beginning until working software later. You have a similar team concept, rather small, rather cross-functional, diverse, but in the same place if possible. Why are you doing this? You want to get fast feedback, reduce risk, and something we did not mention explicitly, you don't only want to improve your product in circles, but you also want to improve yourself and the way you're working. This is why we heavily apply and don't skip the part of Scrum, which is about retrospectives, and we have a so-called continuous improvement process around it to solve bigger problems that the team Scrum Master might not be able to solve.
Tobias, I just want to add one point here, that when you're doing your journey of transformation, let's say for Lean or Agile, one of the most important things, and it's a topic that sometimes does not get as much love as it deserves, is the topic of tools. Your product in the end is only as good as the tools which are used to develop it. So please think about your tools. For what do you use for portfolio management? What do you use for backlog management? How do you handle incident management? Yeah, how are you working with defect management? And if your company's success story is like that of SAP or any other large organization, over a period of time, you will have tools which do the same job. You will have duplicate data. You will have more tools than people need. So a simplification of the tools landscape was also one of the major projects for us at SAP during this transformation from 2009 to 2016. And that's something that you need to consider. One other thing before I hand back over to Tobias is, Tobias talked about design thinking being about solving one particular problem. Just as an aside, which might help you if it interests you after the session, one of the most interesting examples that I've heard of a single problem that design thinking solved was in developing countries, a lot of babies are lost every year in the first few months of birth because they don't get enough heat. Yeah, they're not able to keep these babies warm. So there was a design challenge at Stanford University to design a baby warmer for less than $50, which usually used to cost $500. So a team actually came up with a baby warmer for less than $50. It became a whole new product for them, and they established a company called Embrace. It's based in Bangalore, and it's run by somebody called Jane Chen. Just look up Embrace and look up Jane Chen as a good example for design thinking. Yep. Back to you.
Thanks. And maybe before we go to questions, to zoom out of all the details we have thrown at you, what is our overall innovation mix or innovation culture mix? So our current development process, and you might remember one of the first slides where you had all these, you know, development frameworks, is called idea to market. And all these ideas of iterating, design thinking, agile are built into that. So agile is the default since, I think, end of 2009.
That's right.
Scrum is the default approach for each team. We have a set of other acres, you could say. We allow loose collaboration with customers and partners in the beginning, applying design thinking. We are fostering, investing a lot into co-innovation with partners, with customers. Some of you might know one of our app houses. One is in Heidelberg, which is the closest to Waldorf, but it's all over the place in Shanghai and Palo Alto, where we invite customers, listen to them, to their problems. Well, we don't know yet, will that be a custom development project? Will that end up in the standard software, or what happens? On the other hand, we are cultivating innovation in the sense that we have our innovation centers. They're really out in the field, hire the most clever people and let them do their thing. Yeah, there's one in Potsdam, you might know, which is, again, outside, 45 minutes outside Berlin. There's one in Nanjing, which is close to Shanghai, and so on. We launched, I think pretty successfully, something called Intrapreneurship Program, where our people are allowed to pitch their ideas, follow up their ideas, and if they make certain stages, go on a fellowship, so they get out of their day job and can follow up their own business ideas. something which has a very high participation rate and made a big buzz in the last couple of months. You can also check it out on YouTube. There are some examples. And of course, it sounds nice, you know, be agile, be lean, be mean, do design thinking, but we have also serious topics like architecture, like security, that need to be taken care of, even more so in the cloud world. This is why you have so-called competence centers, competence teams that ensure that, you know, besides all these being agile and customer value, that some certain things are not compromised. Yeah. And for us, maybe the last story I share today, with that kind of storyline, I went, I think, last year to the European Innovation Forum, where other companies like Bayer and what have you, Unilever, present their innovation strategy, and they have a chief innovation officer on board level even. So they said, oh, well, now I'm coming with this bits and pieces thing. But on the contrary, the feedback was very good because they said, well, it made them think, so maybe this mix of thing is the right approach. Maybe there's not the one thing, the one approach to innovation. So maybe the truth is in the middle. We are done. So, and we are also up for any questions. And I'd like to say thank you so far.
But thank you so much. Any quick questions before you head over into coffee? We don't want to steal your coffee break. Yes. So, for instance, for backlog management, we are using a tool called Jira, which is developed by Atlassian. We have an entire tools department which is responsible for a lot of the in-house software that we use so far. Most of the things like for test management, we have our own in-house tools. And what we've done over the years is there was a point when we looked at our portfolio of tools and we had 80 tools. This was 80 tools. And this was as the company had evolved. Everybody who needed to automate something built his or her own tool and was using it. So we also streamlined that. And in the last years, we brought that down from 80 to 50. It's once you have a tool and people are using it, even if you want to go in a different direction, it's difficult. So we've streamlined our tools landscape. I mean, Jira is just one of the examples of tools that we use. We have, in a lot of cases, custom-built tools, which, let's say, the integration of Jira with our test management system, that is something we've developed on our own. So that for every backlog item, you see the test status also in your backlog management system. Yeah. And there are companies, for instance, which do portfolio management in Excel sheets. And maybe that pleases the folks at Microsoft, but if you're a large company and you're doing Excel, your portfolio management in Excel sheets, there's a lot of data over there. So for each of these things that I talked about, we either have a solution that we've purchased from the market or we have our own in-house tool that's developed. Mm.
And maybe for these templates, business models and so on, I think here the answer is twofold because, I mean, there are tools and we do have tools, but on the other hand, we want to encourage people to meet and do this, you know, in a live session. So it's a bit ambiguous, you know, once you provide a super tool, people say, okay, well then I'll do it from home and we can have remote workshops. And in our experience, this does not really work, you know, at least for the first couple of iterations.
Any other questions? We're also here at the after the session, so please feel free to come over. And before I close, let me say this has been as much fun as a Coldplay concert, so thank you for being a great audience. Thanks again.
Thanks. See you soon.